Welcome back. Live It Out a podcast. Tim, hello.
Dave Grun.
Hey,
hello.
Man. Hey, man. It's so funny. You make me laugh when you say Dave Grun because my wife, she calls me Dave Grun.
Yeah.
It's always one Dave word. Grun.
Yeah.
It's,
well, you come in Dave the office. Grun. You come in the office. That's the way you greet me.
It's Tim Bubar. Tim Bubar.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Hey, we're coming out of Vision Weekend, but we just let everyone know we had to record this one in advance. And it's also why we're going to take, after this episode, we're going to take a break for the summer because we're in, we're out, we're different places in the summer, and we are going to pick up in August. We're doing a series in 1 Peter, where it'll be an overview series. We're not going to go through 1 Peter in depth, but really talking about families. This series is called Reset, and it's giving families a chance as we get ready to head into a new school year to hit reset and using 1 Peter to do that. And we will pick up the podcast for that series.
Yes.
So with that, just knowing that we don't know any current events that have happened in the world.
Yeah. Because presumably when we put this one online, you're in Israel, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
in theory,
cool.
I'm in Israel.
Hope you're having a great time.
I hope I'm in Israel when this is broadcast. So with that, coming out of Vision Weekend, talking about the idea of gospel generosity, and this is one of those topics that people get funny when you start talking about money, and there's just a lot of cliche kind of thoughts right out there when it comes to money, and it can cause people in ministry like us to be a little reluctant
to talk
about money.
Yeah. There's been enough times that you can go, oh, I wish, you know, like, well, they should not have talked about it that way, or they talked about it one way and used the money another way. They abuse, you know, like televangelist, whatever, you know, I mean, like, there's just all these things, and you can go, I don't just want to be one of those cliches.
Right.
And so sometimes we just kind of steer away from talking about something that Jesus talked about as really important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so for this series, and we've done Vision Weekend different. Different years, different things. And really Vision Weekend is just a way for us to have an opportunity where we have some annual business that we have to take care of, but we're not just doing it as an annual business meeting per se, but it gives us an opportunity to say that the business that we do as a church is important because it helps facilitate the vision that God has given us.
Right.
And while it's not driving towards high attendance or something that some churches do, it is something that we would really hope that everyone would participate in or at least check in on along the way. And it worked out in this series that on Vision Weekend, we're talking about something that was super practical when it comes to vision is giving. It's important. Gospel-centered generosity is huge when it comes to seeing the vision that God has given us as a local church play out. Mm-hmm. It's ginormous. And so it gives us a chance to talk a little bit about something that might make us a little bit uncomfortable to talk about. But in particular here, Jesus begins this way. So we've just come out of this whole grouping of practicing righteousness and being complete. And now in chapter 6, He gives this warning. Beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them, for then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. So there's a statement that sets up the next grouping of spiritual practices. It actually is an introduction, not just to giving. And this is once again, where if you're following along in a paper Bible and your Bible editor has put a pericope heading, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
Everybody should know what pericope is. It's a word that if you just see it written, it will look like pericope.
Pericope.
That's what it looks like. It was pronounced pericope.
I didn't mean to use that word. I'm feeling a little bit of guilt right now. it just means it's just a literary unit in scripture.
Yeah.
It's just a way to talk about it. But that's what those headings are actually called from your editor, the person who edited your Bible. And that really, that giving to the needy should go under verse one, because this beware of practicing your righteousness is it's speaking to giving, praying, and fasting. These are three examples of practicing righteousness. There's a phrase, though, we don't use a lot.
Yeah.
Tim, what's your thought on practicing righteousness when it comes to discipleship?
I think we lean into the word practicing. Even at the end of this sermon, Jesus doesn't say, whoever hears these words of mine and does them exactly or does them perfectly. He says, whoever hears these words and puts them into practice. And I do think, like, Jesus is using that language, and that there is a sense of, like, it's putting it into action, but that doesn't mean it's perfect, and it's an ongoing thing, you know? So practicing your righteousness is, I'm following Jesus, and so I'm living out the righteousness, which is heart-based, loving God, loving others. I'm putting that into practice. I'm putting it into action. I'm living it out. That's what I think. That's what practicing your righteousness is. And there's an intentionality to it, because he says, beware of practicing it before other people in order to be seen by them. So, like, there's an intentionality to, these are things I intentionally want to do as I follow Jesus, because I'm, otherwise, how could you beware of the reason that you're doing it unless it's something you're intentionally doing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally.
So things we intentionally do to live out the life that Jesus has called us to. I think that's, like, a big umbrella that I would say. The examples that he gives here, he really gets into very specific spiritual practices or spiritual disciplines that the church has talked about and practiced for years. So he goes after some very specific things here.
And so, since this is our last podcast for this series, we're going to talk about these three practices. So it's interesting to me, because if you don't see the literary structure, as we talked about it last week a bunch, and go, okay, wait, this first introduction sentence is everything to do with not just one practice, but three practices, then you might miss this little lead in on each one of them. So it's, thus when you give in verse 2, and in verse 5, it says, and when you pray. And then in verse 16, it says, and when you fast. Mm-hmm. All three are givens. It's not like, well, if you feel like giving, if you feel like praying,
right?
If you decide to fast,
yeah.
If you decide you want to experiment with fasting, it's just given. These are spiritual disciplines, spiritual practices that have been carried out before Jesus. I mean, he's not inventing new spiritual disciplines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's saying that these are an alignment with God's instruction to his people for ever since writing. I mean, when it comes to the beginning of scripture, right? These are there. Like, these are good spiritual practices. He's not correcting, saying, hey, you don't worry about that anymore. Hey, now that I've come and I've brought a completion to the law, you no longer need to give, you no longer need to pray, and you no longer need to fast. He's not saying that at all.
Right.
And I think so often in my life, I took it as like, oh, well, you know, I got Jesus. Everything else is optional.
Yeah.
And it doesn't appear like these are options.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. He does not treat them that way. He didn't talk about them that way.
And so it's interesting to be able to say, okay, and when you give, okay, well, what's the caution? Everything is the manner in which, not that you would be seen by. And I'm also not saying that he doesn't then give some more instruction. You know, that he's going, okay, well, wait, what does that look like? You know, it's, don't be seen by people. Don't be like, in particular, you know, the actors, the people who are faking it. When he says, as the hypocrites, don't be like the actors. Mm-hmm. Each one of them have the same warning. Don't be like the play actors. Don't be like the people who are just living the external of it. And so when you give to the needy, don't make a big scene of it. And I think this is one of those things that we would say, in particular, is here talking about just when you demonstrate the generosity of the gospel, when you pray for God's kingdom to come on earth as it is in heaven, when you fast, that you would declare your dependence upon God and remind yourself of that you're dependent upon God for everything in your life. Like when you do those things, don't do it just to be seen by others.
Yeah.
That's not the point.
Right. And that will be the end of it. If you do it for that purpose, that's all it's going to accomplish in you is you'll be seen by others and they might pat you on the back and say, you're a good guy. But if you wanted to do more than that in your heart and in, you know, to be seen and rewarded by God, if you want that, then you got to do it a different way.
Yeah. And then in 19 through 24, he gives a warning when he talks about do not lay up for yourself treasures on earth, but lay up treasures in heaven. Like, and he's talking about where your treasure is. That's where your heart's going to be. No one can serve two masters, because you're going to hate one or you're going to hate one and love the other. You're going to be devoted to one or despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. We don't have time to unpack everything that is in that word right there, but this is all one unit. And the way that we know that is 25 picks up with a therefore. And it has everything to do with being anxious. So you have 25 in the therefore into 34 in the therefore. That's the culmination. That's the result of all of this.
Right.
Practicing your righteousness and giving to the needy and laying up for yourself treasures in heaven are connected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that can start to feel a little bit weird for us.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel weird about the phrase laying up treasures in heaven?
Yes. Yep. Because it's hard to pin for me to pin down, to even imagine, wait, what are we talking about here? I maybe in the past wanted to get really I want to know specifically what's going on here. And I've sort of surrendered and gone, okay, I'll go with the general idea, but What does he mean, storing treasures in heaven? Yeah, it feels a little funky.
Yeah, it's really hard.
Yeah.
And here's where I've seen in the past, here's where I've seen people struggle with this, is with this idea of storing treasures in heaven, particularly around motivation.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And doesn't that seem like I'm doing something with the wrong motive if it's about or seems to be about what I'm getting out of it? Uh-huh. Doesn't that seem wrong to say that I'm giving or and I would say here, like, giving to the needy, he never specifically says giving money to the needy, but there is a this idea of money is explicit later on when he's talking about not serving money, right? Mm-hmm. Not serving the treasures of this world. You can expand this out. And that's not, I believe, exegetically inaccurate to say when it comes to generosity here, he's not just saying, hey, when you give to the needy, yeah, it is financially, but it's also like, how am I investing in them? How am I helping others? It is more than just, it's the thing you value.
Yeah.
And I heard this said one time, I can't even begin, it could have been said by a million different people. But when it comes to the things that we value, how do we determine it? How do you determine the things that you value most? Mm-hmm. And it's really has just stuck with me. It's the idea of what do I think about? What do I think about most? Mm-hmm. Those are the things that I value. And so if it's people, I would say that's most significant. Mm-hmm. It's important that we would value people more than anything in this world,
sure.
right? But even that can lead us to an unhealthy obsessing mm-hmm. over, well, whether it's our family, you know, kids, whatever that may be. And it can lead to some unhealthiness. But when you're going, wow, you treasure your children uh-huh. more than anything else, that's probably not the healthiest
right.
approach. And yet the world would say, that's right.
Right.
Does that seem crazy?
Yeah. And we do it all the time. You know, we talked a few weeks ago about desire, and this just, that's another thing the world will say. Like, oh, well, what your heart wants is what it wants. And so the best, the truest thing you can do is pursue what your heart desires. You know, that's the best thing you do. Or your children, you know, so either your sort of natural desire is the ultimate good. So make that your treasure that you go after. Or your children are the, so treasure that above all else. Or your children are the thing that really matters, because the treasure that about above all else. The world is willing and seems to think, I think it's kind of like this. Well, if there's not a God who is good and loving and truly worthy of our total devotion, if that's not there, then we have to find something else that is good and worthy and of our total devotion. So it can be our kids, or it can be money, or it can be our desires, or, you know, the world gives us a few options. But there's got to be something. And if the idea of God is off the table, then it's going to be something else.
Yeah, it's going to be something else, right? Yeah. And then we can even take those good gifts that God has given us, good things mm-hmm. that he wants us to enjoy and experience, and they end up ruling us. They end up in this place where they compete with loving God most, right?
And right. That's the problem.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm going to place my children as the most important thing, then maybe my spouse gets sacrificed in the process.
Right.
It's like, wait, that's not really the pattern we see in Scripture. Mm-hmm. You know, the bottom line is, the husband and wife relationship is the one that reflects the union of Christ in the church. It's the one that reflects God's oneness to the world.
Right.
It's the relationship that matters most. And yet often, you know, kids come along and that's the one that gets sacrificed because kids become priority. And how do we elevate and go, well, you know, they're the most important thing. Well, the most important thing may be seeing a mom and dad pursue Jesus.
Right. And the kid, because that relationship is the one that's meant to last the rest of your life. Not that your relationship with your kids won't last, but it's going to change a lot if it's a healthy mm-hmm. one, because they're going to grow up and you're going to send them off and they're going to maybe they'll meet somebody and get married to them, and that'll be, you know, but that relationship is going to change. The husband and wife one is meant to last, and so nurture that one. You know, yeah, we got to make priorities. It's just the reality. We're limited in what we can make a priority, and God says be very careful about what you treasure and what you make highest.
And I think that even comes, and I am going somewhere, ties into the way we would see financial generosity in the church. And just some recent experience, learning books and things along the way. It's often, I think, hard for us to draw that connection of saying, okay, well, in giving to the church, how am I demonstrating a generous life to my children? Like, what is that?
Oh, yeah, modeling that for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in particular, one of the authors was talking about how, and it was a study, and there's some significant research out there on generosity in particular, not around the church, but just philanthropy is the word that the secular world uses, mm-hmm. and that it is something that is absolutely learned. It's not mm-hmm. something that is inherent in us. We learn this, mm-hmm. and it's demonstrated. And it forced me to go back and examine my life and to go, okay, have I demonstrated a life of generosity to my kids?
Yeah.
And the bottom line is, I don't know that I've done that. I don't think that I've, because I've not talked about money frequently. Does that make sense? You know, yeah. Like I've talked about it, yeah. but not frequently. And what does, I feel like I've taught them wisdom.
Yeah.
But not, okay, well, what does it look like for you to be financially generous? And at the same time, I think, Kelly and I think we've pressed really hard into how are you generous with your time? How are you generous with your talents? How are you investing in, you know, like in the kingdom of God? I think we've pressed really hard into that. But I think it's an area that can be really awkward, even as parents,
right?
To talk about financial giving.
And it's one of the problems, again, with like, if we take the Sermon on the Mount for something other than what it is, and you go, well, it's just a new set of laws that are harder to keep than the old laws, then you hear Jesus say, when you give to the needy, do it in secret. And you go, oh, well, I better not tell my kids about it because
right.
then I'm just doing it for their approval. No, I might need to tell them about it. It's just what you're talking about. So it can be modeled before them and they need to see it. And so we can actually take Jesus's words the wrong way and miss out on a great opportunity to model something good to our kids because we thought Jesus was making a rule about giving has to be secret when in reality he's saying don't do it for the purpose of being seen.
Yeah, what's the motive?
Right.
Yeah, like my motive isn't
get my kids think I'm an awesome.
Yeah. It's like, okay, hey, this is, and at the same time, I read a book called I don't remember the name now. So it was about gospel generosity. But in it, he makes a compelling case for the which is a position that I've held for a long time, but he makes a compelling case for the end of tithing in the law. The tithe closed with the completion of God's story with Israel. There's no longer a tithe, and the tithe is far more, if we're going to go by Old Testament standards, the tithe is significantly more than 10%. Mm-hmm. The tithe, the word means 10%, but there was multiple tithes, and it ends up being closer to, you know, high 20s if you average it because it's spent over years. All that.
Okay.
All that to say.
I'll take your word for
all it. All that to say, you know, because there's more than one tithe.
And, yeah.
But what was the purpose? The purpose of the tithe was in order that the system that God had put in place through the Mosaic covenant or the Sinai covenant that he had put in place through Torah, that it would be able to function. In mm-hmm. order for God's Torah to function, it required that it would have the tithe. That was all built into the system. Mm-hmm. Well, as Jesus brought the completion of that system, he's now given us a new standard, so to speak, right? And it's generosity. And often when we say that, people think that lowered the bar. But Jesus never lowers the bar.
Yeah.
We've seen that throughout the Sermon on the Mount. The bar is not lower.
Right, right.
It's now different. Going, well, why do I give now? Well, it's based upon who Jesus is, the transformation that I've experienced, and the fact that I've been liberated from the kingdom of this world, and I now live in the kingdom of the heavens. I now live under the rule and reign of God, and I now live in a place where I can live open-handed.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to try very hard to see that the way that the world is wired is to live closed-handed. I don't have to look farther than a small child. That's how I can see that it is hardwired within the human heart and mind to acquire and mm-hmm. hold on.
Yeah.
That is the kingdom of this world.
Yeah.
We're wired to hold on, to keep what's mine. That's just
You know, and I think there is something that's like, okay, there is something at a base level that's good in that. There's a reason human beings are made to go, like, it's what gets us off our butts to work is I need
survival.
Yes, it's survival. So we have some of that in us. What we miss though, when we live a life of greed instead of generosity is the truth, the reality that Jesus teaches here that, you know, when he gets later on in chapter 6, they're not being anxious. He's like, well, you don't have to worry because I'm gonna take care of you. So you don't have to desperately just look out for yourself. So it's that whole thing of like, okay, I naturally, in my humanness, have a drive. And so I think that's why he talks about rewards. He's like, I know you have a drive to get things and store up things and make sure you've got what you need. Well, let me tell you how this is going to work. Store up the things that are going to last forever. Go with that. Go with your drive for getting what you need. And just know that I'm going to provide it for you. You can be generous now. And in doing so, you'll store up things in heaven. And I think part of the reason we try and, like, we feel weird about the talk of reward as motivation is we think we should be holier than Jesus. And like, he's not saying deny. Human beings like prizes.
Yes.
We like working at something.
Yes.
And then ding, ding, you got something for what you did. He's saying, don't forget that reality of the way that your mind and body work. No, just know that the environment that your mind and body is working in, and it's not one where what you see is all you get.
Yeah. Redirect.
Redirect it.
Yeah.
Go after the reward, but know that the reward is going to be delayed. You're going to get it in heaven someday. You're going to have everything you need. I'm going to take care of you now. So be generous. Yeah. And you get to that principle. That's not just a tithe. It's a principle of generosity.
Yeah. This is the way I think of it, because in my life it was like, okay, well, if you have a tithe is required and that's all that's required mentality, I don't think you move on to generosity.
Yeah.
I think you see it as you're paying the temple tax.
Yeah.
You know, I'm paying the tax that comes with following Jesus. And I will be honest. I mean, that was something that I was intentionally trying not to wire into my kids, that they wouldn't just think, yeah, hey, here's your legal obligation, you know, so give 10% to the church and you're cool. That was trying to wire something into them beyond that. And so still working on that.
And it's that, but it is the same what Jesus is doing in the previous section in the Sermon on the Mount, which is there's a law, but there's a principle behind it. And now you've done a lot more of your homework on this than I have, but mm-hmm. Is it right to think that, okay, so there was this command to give the tithe, but the principle behind it is generosity. Would you also say that there's a principle of proportionality behind it, that we should continue to consider, like, that those who have a lot should give a lot?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this is like, okay, so I want to talk a little bit about this.
Okay.
So took a class, you know, 20 years ago in seminary on giving.
Mm-hmm.
And that school had stopped it, hadn't had that class in like 20 years. And they're like, well, we really missed the boat, you know, and around this class. So I read a book by Randy Alcorn called Money, Possessions, and Eternity. And
I've seen it on your shelf. I've never read it.
Yeah. That was a book way back from that class.
Okay.
And it really, it's interesting because one of the other books that I would recommend by him is the book Heaven. Mm-hmm. It really adjusted my view of, you know, a cloud and a harp and heaven, that really means. And the same with money, eternity, and possessions. It addresses all these things. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you handle rewards and what's your motive and all that? But it really did shape this idea that I didn't want my kid to grow up with this idea of a tithe. And that's all that's required. Now, that doesn't mean there are churches out there that teach like the tithe is the starting point, and that's why they use the words tithe and offerings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the tithe is the, but it still for me says this is the required part.
You know, then you can see what you want to do after that.
Yeah, this is the law, and now you get to give the bonus on top of the law. And it's important for us to go, no. So to go to your question specifically,
mm-hmm.
generosity does not get easier with more. So this was something that was taught in that class. Mm-hmm. And then along the way, I've got to meet some people, not here, but in previous experiences, previous churches, people with some significant financial resources. Mm-hmm. And the one thing, I have a couple people in mind in particular, and the one thing that they would both say, in fact, they both said to me that if I hadn't learned to be generous and give before I had money, uh-huh. I never would have done it after. Uh-huh. It doesn't get easier. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's not like, okay, I've got lots of resources now, so most of it is extra. I can just give it away like crazy.
Right.
That's not normal. That's not normal.
That's not how people are wired.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the bottom line is, and then I just recently took a class recently on the same kind of thing. So here it is, 20 years apart. Nothing's changed. Mm-hmm. You know, it's still, if it's the examples we see in the Bible, mm-hmm. of generosity aren't, hey, this guy had a lot of money and he gave some away. It's this woman had nothing,
yeah.
and she gave pennies. And yeah. in God's eyes, who was the most generous?
Right.
You know, it wasn't the one who paid the temple tax.
Yeah.
It was the one who says, gave in my need,
yeah.
you know? And so it's really hard for us as people. And this is a point both of them made to me, and they didn't do it at the same time. It doesn't get any easier to give when you have more, because every zero that you put on a check is painful.
Yeah.
It just grows in the amount.
Yeah.
And that amount, even though percentage-wise may be a smaller percentage of what you gave, mm-hmm. the amount grows to be
sure.
really large.
Yeah, and I would think you just begin to realize all the things I could do with this.
Yes.
Really tests that, where's my treasure? What am I, you know, what am I investing in? What do I really value? What do I think will last? Because I can think of a bunch of things I could do with all these zeros.
Right. Yeah. And so I've never been in a place where I had a lot of zeros. And so some of this is just on theory, but it's based upon research too. Yeah. What ends up happening is, and so reason that we say, I was just reading something on social media about a guy came into billions of dollars, right? And you hear this story all the time. And what he experienced rather than new opportunity, sold uh-huh. his company, came into, you know, 1.5 billion, you wow. know? And I can't even imagine what that is, right? And he ends up in this place of no purpose, no lost in the world, mm-hmm. you know, lost, no friends, lost in the world. Why? Because he what really motivated him mm-hmm. was the product he was making. Mm-hmm. It was the process and the creativity and all of a sudden he traded all that away and now he never knew who his friends were. He never understood.
Yeah.
And so we have this idea, oof. You know, like if I just had enough money, all my problems would be solved. Well, okay, maybe the problem of you know, paying a certain bill.
Maybe, some problems would be solved.
Maybe that would be solved.
Yeah.
But you're going to get a whole new batch of problems
yeah.
that you never imagined.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden what happens is, from what I understand, the more you get, uh-huh. and especially if it's exponentially more, the fear of losing it grows exponentially with it. Mm. And all of a sudden your world becomes about managing not losing
yeah.
what you have.
Yeah.
So at that point, trying to give and not lose what you have becomes more difficult, not less difficult.
Yeah.
And you're less reminded on the fact that ultimately I'm dependent upon God.
Yeah.
And we see that right. over and
you
over.
You get further and further from that reality and it's harder to remember.
Right.
Yeah.
And this played out in a really, real tangible way for me on a trip in Colombia where we were there helping local churches talk about Jesus in their communities. And when we were in different levels of affluence in these neighborhoods, some of them would be significant. I mean, significantly affluent neighborhoods where uh-huh. they were planting this church. And the ability to talk to people about Jesus in the affluent areas is incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
And in less affluent areas, and especially in poor areas, it was very easy to talk about the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the reason that people prey upon people in Africa with the health and wealth gospel
yeah.
is because there's such a great need. It's yeah. obvious I need, but for people who have means, it's not obvious that I need. So along the way, if we breed a generosity mindset, what are we doing? Well, it's counterintuitive that I would experience greater joy, greater happiness. It actually affects your health and you have less worry. And so in secular research, they talk about the benefits of a generous mindset over an ungenerous mindset. And they would say that the ungenerous mindset would be about 75% of society lives with an ungenerous mindset. And the way that you know that you have an ungenerous mindset, it's marked by discontent, insecurity, a fear of scarcity, and the desire to acquire more. Those define the ungenerous. 25% have a generous mindset. Once again, like I just said, greater joy, happiness, tends to be healthier. And they've discovered like it is tied to your physical health. A generous mindset does have physical health implications.
And it's
crazy.
Yeah. And it's, again, it's like you hear those things and it just reinforces God knows the best way to live in the universe that he created. And he's just trying to show us, this is how you thrive in the, I made a universe with planets,
yes,
air, you know, here's the best way to live in it. And we always think, I got a better way. And even something like this, generosity, you know, you look at a study like that and you go, wow, it's even better for your health. He knows how the universe works.
Yeah.
We should really trust him more often.
And like, okay, so let's take money off the table.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just a principle, a generous mindset. And we think about all the things we could be generous with. It's why we ask people to do Serve Saturday.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a tangible way. Okay. I said, hey, maybe I haven't done a great job with my kids teaching them all the ins and outs of financial generosity when it comes to giving in the local church. But then I turn around and go, oh yeah, but man, when it comes to investing in your time in ministry and in service in the community and through Serve Saturday, that's just one expression of how do I demonstrate that my time, that people are worth me investing my time in.
Yeah.
And to go, what a great opportunity to demonstrate generosity in something that's seemingly insignificant. Mm-hmm. And I would be like, I've seen it. Mm-hmm. I've seen it work up close and personal. I've seen a generous mindset develop out of a spiritual discipline called Serve Saturday.
Yeah. 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 It's even if it's not writing a check, it's an act of generosity, and that impacts what you believe is true, what you think is important, and it spills over in other ways. This is good. This is good because I'm just thinking right now, I've got two daughters who are really just getting started in their first, you know, like outside the house jobs. And, yeah, how do you start from the from that point? Like as you think about what you're earning, okay, let's just take from a money standpoint.
Yeah,
how can we as your parents help you think about a life of generosity, not just a life of cutting a 10% check for your church, but a life of generosity. There's a difference. Yeah,
there really is.
Yeah,
and then I know that it's just even people maybe listening right now, it just can come across as marketing. And that's what I hope it doesn't come across
as. That's the thing I think it's so hard to not feel when you're in a leadership position at a church, whether you're on staff or you're an elder or something like that. It's like, yeah, you feel like, what if people just think this is just marketing?
Yeah.
Because that's not it.
Yeah. I would even feel uncomfortable talking about examples from people from Two Rivers because it is such a sensitive kind of thing. And, it's just, we can't get over that.
I get a paycheck every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And it comes from what people give to Two Rivers.
Yeah.
So it puts you in this weird spot of like, am I just trying to make sure I get paid?
Yeah.
You know, will people think that? Is that what they'll hear?
100%.
Right.
So I'm going to talk about previous church experience.
Okay.
Again, sorry. It was when I had, and once again, one is the same person that I was referring to earlier, was talking about how it doesn't get easier to give when you have more money.
Yeah.
One of them is the same one. One of them is a different one. And this is when I felt like this person really sees me as somebody who's interested in them as a whole person, and I'm interested in their inner life, not just interested in them from a distance as a quote unquote pastor, that they saw me as someone who they entrusted their whole life with. Hmm. And so both of them at lunch began to talk about financial things and more specifically personal financial things and how it was being used to shape them in following Jesus. And I was like, whoa, this is significant.
Yeah.
And it's easy for me to forget about that. And so part of me taking this class recently, I had to go back and I had to remember some things along the way, you know, significant events, you know, like how did you develop a generosity mindset if you have? And I would be like, well, you know, I watched my dad be generous. I don't know about giving to the church. I think, yes. And they were actively involved. Yeah, I think. Uh-huh. But I just watched him have a generosity mindset. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing. But in that class, I was reminded of these two conversations that I had where I felt like because the person let me into some personal, significant personal financial conversations and how they impacted the kingdom of God, I felt like this person really sees me as a trusted spiritual advisor where they see this integration of the whole life.
Yeah.
And that was really cool.
Yeah.
And so it's easy then to forget that. And it's easy to forget that when it comes to when we teach the Bible and that really everybody needs that. We all need somebody who loves us enough to go, hey, are you being generous?
Right. It doesn't have to be your pastor, but you need to have, I mean, that's why we all need relationships like that, that are close enough to get into each other's business, including our finances.
Yeah.
To be close enough to somebody that you could actually reveal, this is how this plays out in my life, because then that allows them to speak into it.
Yeah, who could you encourage? I mean, it's so easy to say, hey, I'm learning how to pray. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm learning how to pray. God's teaching me so much as I'm learning how to pray. I'm learning how to ask questions in prayer, and I'm learning how to distinguish God's answers in those prayers. Or we encourage people, experiment with fasting. Uh-huh. You know, like, man, I'm really growing and learning about fasting. Mm-hmm. That's easy to talk about. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to talk about, man, God is teaching me so much about generosity and growing in generosity.
Yeah.
That is a difficult conversation.
It
is. And one, it indicates that maybe I'm not where I should be when it comes to generosity, and I'm a little afraid you're going to judge me. And
right.
Does that,
you know, and you know, like somebody says, oh, God's teaching me this about prayer. Oh, give me some examples. Tell me what that's like. Sure. Okay. I'll give those. Oh, God's really working on generosity in my life. Oh, give me some examples. Tell me about that. Well, you know, like record screech right there, like put on the brakes, because, well, I don't want to tell you about specifics about my financial life and how I'm spending my money. You might judge me on that. You might want something from me that I'm not ready to give. You know, like, it gets scarier.
People get funny when you start talking about money. That is true. Hey, Tim. Okay. Going to shift gears. That was a lot. We're going to shift gears and we're going to take a break for the summer. Do you have anything? You have anything fun planned for this summer?
Yes. Let's see. We're going way up north to Duluth, Minnesota, on Lake Superior. Which summer is a great time to go there? I don't recommend you go any
would
other
be terrible.
Time. April is terrible. I mean, like in April, it's just freezing cold. And but summer's a good time to go. So we're going up there. Kara's twin sister lives up there. Her daughter's graduating from high school. We're going to go join them. And then a couple weeks after that, I'm taking my son to the camp that I grew up going to. Is a boys' camp in Minnesota. It's a Christian camp. It's a place that had an immeasurable impact on my life. You know, in going as a kid, working as a high schooler, on staff as a college student, and they do father-son camps for younger boys. So I'm taking my son up for father-son camp at Camp Nathaniel in Hinckley, Minnesota, and I am really, really excited about that.
That's awesome.
Cool. Yeah.
Going back to the homeland.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
Are you getting away this summer?
Oh, well, hopefully. I'm in Israel as we speak. And, you know, after that, you know, it's going to be more, this summer will be more, opportunities to maybe just get away in short little stints.
Yeah.
And so,
cool.
Spend some time, getting to hang out in short little, maybe a couple lake trips over a couple weekends, maybe.
Nice.
We'll see how that plays out. All that to say, we're going to pick up again in August. I hope this has been an encouraging series as we continue to learn what it looks like to live it out together. Tim, do you have a final word as we head into this summer?
That making the most of the summer in your spiritual life doesn't always necessarily mean just adding on more and more stuff. Take summer for what it is. It's supposed to be a change of pace a little bit. And I'd say look at, you know, okay, so there's no podcast this summer. I'm not saying that's the foundation of anybody's spiritual,
not even close,
you know, life. But it just makes me think about it, as we're taking the summer off from doing the podcast, there's a change of our rhythms. We keep the essential things in there for following Jesus, and we experiment with some new things. Some, maybe you're on vacation, maybe you're doing something different. See how God will use that as you keep following him through the summer, and then we'll all be back together as we hit the ground this fall. It'll be good.
Yeah. Have a great summer. We'll see you in August.